Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And tonight we have a special call, a guest. Her name is Dr. Flory Lelly. She is has a doctorate in the law, and she graduated from a college in Texas, and she went actually to undergraduate school in psych care, in Charleston, South Carolina. But she's had a number of important positions. I've known her for many years when she was held the Cliff Murchison Chair at one of the large universities in Texas, and then she had an illness, and I sort of lost track of Flory until we ran into her at a meeting here recently. So I asked her to come on because she talks a great deal about something that should affect every one of us, and that is the environmental movement and the movement to use the environment as a vehicle of taking away our freedom, taking away our liberty. Because you must understand that the purpose behind the environmental movement, all the problems they talk about, whether it be global warming or the ozone hole or the shortage of water or the air pollution, the solution is always a new series of government controls. That's what it's really all about. And they use the problems, in fact, many times they actually create the problems to justify the solution. And this is the path to a fascist America. Flory, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you, Stan.
It's good to hear your voice so strong, and I'm so glad you're feeling so well today.
Well, we're on this side of the ground, and just let's stay here.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, you're going to be talking, I know, at the big conference. They're going to be having a conference, incidentally, from the 21st to the 23rd or 24th up in Reno, Nevada. In fact, I'm going to be going to that conference. It's being put on by Freedom 21, the group headed by Henry Lamb, in an effort to educate people about what's going on. Anybody who wants more information, go to their website at freedom.org, and inexpensive programs. Some of the finest speakers in the country will be there, including our guests this evening. So why don't you pick up and just start telling people about your concerns and really what the environmental movement is really all about in your estimation.
Well, thank you, Stan. I think you probably know that for about a decade or so there, out of the University of Texas, I was referred to as Liberty Lily. And it kind of tells you where I come from. I value what freedom can do to people and can do for the planet. And because I do value that, we're looking constantly, every day, in every way, at what plans do other people have for us? And my gracious, I've just moved down here to Florida, and you remember in just Cuba when suddenly Castro nationalized all of the industry in Cuba and just took over what were the properties of many Americans, as a matter of fact. Well, in Florida, not more than within the last two decades, the state of Florida basically did the same thing with the entire water supply of the entire state of Florida. Now, this was had been private property, as it still is in Texas that I just left, but in the state of Florida, the state just said, no, we're going to nationalize or statize all the water. There was no just compensation given for that theft of that property.
How did they do that, Flory?
They did it legislatively.
Was it the rivers that they took, or was it the strings? What about the...
It was the entire aquifer.
In other words, the wells as well.
The groundwater as well. the entire aquifer, the groundwater, the lakes, the rivers, the streams.
Now, of course, was this done under the guise of these terrible shortages of water that we have in America that they've created artificially? In other words, how do they justify what they did?
Well, it was. It certainly was, Dan. You're right that because water is a scarce resource, we must have regions and water management districts that centrally plan the use of water.
And, of course, this goes right along with the World Bank water policy, which, incidentally, is contained within our Sustainable Development syllabus. It goes right along with the edicts that came out of the Second Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. And certainly they talk about there about how they're going to use water to control this, because that's what it's really all about. They're not interested in a solution. They're interested in control.
Well, they certainly are, and of course it's not just water. It'll be energy and the sea. I mean, what, 70% of our planet is ocean? And my gracious, Henry Lamb and you and I are watching the Law of the Sea Treaty, which will give the United Nations its first global taxation entrance through the Seabed Taxing Authority, will essentially make the largest part of this planet a United Nations commons. Amazing, horrible, just power grab. They are thieves. They are getting away with this plunder. They're too few people who understand even the economics of this socialism versus free enterprise, free markets, capitalism.
Well, I think the real problem is freedom or tyranny. Will we be
of
free
course.
To have the right to use our property, or will we be simply taken over? Will all of our freedom be taken over, our property be taken over in the name of the common good? And you know the most interesting thing, now I don't know what's happened down in Florida, but I know what's happened here in California. They blocked efforts to put in reservoirs. They blocked efforts to put in dams. In fact, in some areas they're even tearing out the dams in the name of the little fishies and the ecology movement and how terrible dams are. But all of this is an effort to create the problem. Certainly, you know, you can always solve the problem with long-range planning, and you should be putting in the reservoirs, and you should be doing the other things that are necessary to plan for the future, and this is always blocked. They can always find a reason why you can't solve the problem, because they want the problem. If they didn't have the problem, they couldn't come up with a solution, which is increasing control of our lives. But the water is a beautiful example of this, and they spend hundreds of thousands, not millions of dollars on planning, on new studies, and then other new studies. And instead of spending the money on the reservoirs and the other things that would provide the water for the communities, why another new study, another new planning, another new commission, and they put off doing the problem until there's a crisis, and then, of course, they can say, oh, there's such a shortage of water, and we've just got to limit what you're using, because after all, you know, if you go to Saudi Arabia, why a barrel of water is more valuable than a barrel of oil, and so that's why we have to conserve water here in California. And you know, it's the most incredible thing how naive most people are. They just can't see what's happening. And they go along saying, well, my goodness, there must really be a problem, because we read about it every day, we see about it on the television, we're told over and over again that there's all these shortages, and they never ask why are we suddenly developing all these shortages and all these problems. Is that pretty well what happened down there in Florida? Is that how they got this thing through?
Well, it went hand in glove with the central planning of all of land use also that's happened here in Florida. And this is all part of Agenda 21, and most people in Florida have never heard of Agenda 21. If you said United Nations, they wouldn't believe that the UN had any negative thoughts, perhaps, about their own lives. And they do not understand that this entire central planning of every important factor of production in your life, this is land, this is your own labor, and this is capital or savings, instead of being able to be in private ownership hands where it can do its only useful work of creating resources and creating savings in order to create wealth, health, levels of life, and prosperity, these people instead have buffaloed everybody's stand with the words that, oh, you were never meant to own land. Oh, private property is greedy. Capitalists are pigs. The water and the soil can only be owned by Gaia or some sort of other aspect, that it is unnatural to own these factors of production.
Well, I think
and then they go on to argue that the only moral thing in the world or the planet is for there to be social justice and social equity. Usually that's the big phrase. Well, what an absolute myth to say that equality is even a proper moral or ethical goal for humans. The blessings of human beings is that we're very diverse and we are certainly not equal. And luckily we're not, because of our inequalities, we have wonderful specializations, and that produces division of labor, which is a whole part of the secret of why then we trade with each other, as opposed to each of us being completely equal in every aspect and every skill and every possibility, and equal in outcomes. There would be no division of labor. There would be no voluntary trading between humans, no social contract at all.
Well, of course, they really don't want that. They want everything mediated through the state, and that means, of course, through the ruling elite. But somebody once said that free people are never equal, and equal people are never free. And I think we have to understand that. And because this whole concept, of egalitarianism is a Marxist concept. And Marxism is not the redistribution of the wealth of the wealthy. It is the redistribution of the wealth of the middle class, because many, many wealthy people support socialism because they realize it is a method of returning to feudalism. There will be a ruling elite. There was a ruling elite in communist Russia. There is a ruling elite today in communist China. There is a ruling elite in North Korea. There is a ruling elite in Vietnam. There is a ruling elite in Cuba today. And increasingly, there is a ruling elite here in the United States. People say we could never have communism here. And I would like to point out we have more Marxist and Marxist concepts and programs in the United States than they ever had in either Russia or communist China.
Well, I believe they do. At the University of Texas, where I was for a decade, they are very proud of being Marxist. And in their economics department, my son has a degree in economics from UT, they refuse to even consider the free market economics that is available, and thankfully is available through the Mises Institute. All of Mises' fabulous work, Human Action and Socialism, it's just so startling that central planning cannot deliver an industrialized society and cannot deliver wealth creation.
But I think that they really know that. The thing is that they really intend to impoverish our people, but they cannot let the American people know that. If the American people realize that they are intentionally impoverishing us, they are intentionally destroying our industrial base, they are intentionally transferring our jobs overseas, they are intentionally driving down the American dollar, they know exactly what they're doing.
Well, they want so many fewer of us to be on this little blue earth that their goal is our death, and they do see themselves as the remaining few rulers in a what a pitiful, desperate situation.
And yet, if you
but
read their writings,
they just simply do not value human life the way we do.
But if you read their writings, they make it very clear. And anybody who hasn't read my Population Control Agenda monograph, it's on my website entitled RadioLiberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. Pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph, and certainly there's a great deal of very good information, many excellent quotations. Of course, we have a lot more since that time. But there's no question at all that people like Bertrand Russell and Jacques Cousteau and certainly George Bernard Shaw and H.G. Wells were all in favor of mass liquidation of the population. In fact, their plans would dwarf any that Adolf Hitler ever had, but this is never mentioned by the controlled media that sympathizes with this goal because they are anti-human as well. Well, Flo, how can we get people to really understand this? I think the hardest thing for the average individual hearing a program like this is to accept the fact that there really are people that are this wicked in the world who would like to see a large part of the world's population liquidated by wars or by pestilence or by other means.
Well, you're grabbing hold of the best way to do it, Stan, and that is... In the public speaking mode, you are speaking the truth. And it doesn't, I just love that Ludwig von Mises, when he spoke the truth in the 30s and 40s and 50s, he was the only one speaking out about the disaster and the death associated with central planning. And he understood that it did not matter that there was not a great wellspring of both either understanding or sympathy for his views. He even adopted for himself as a young boy a motto from Virgil that he kept all his life that was, do not give in to evil, but proceed ever more boldly against it. And he, against all odds, persevered with speaking the truth and speaking of what human action really is and ought to be and how it everything is about choice, and freedom is actually only and ever the absence of coercion, the absence of coercion. And every single day you have to boldly proceed against the oppression, the corruption, the coercion that is there by the state in every way.
And of course, for our listeners out there who don't know who von Mises was, his name was Ludwig von Mises, and he was an Austrian economist, and he set up what was known as the School of Austrian Economics, talking about the advantages of the free market system over the central planning system. In other words, this free market or competition in contrast to socialism. And of course, he recognized, of course, that the great enemy of freedom was the state, and the state would always corrupt the economy. The state would always destroy the value of the currency. The state was always, of course, working to centralize power and oppress the individual. And certainly many of his writings are espoused by the modern-day libertarians. But von Mises was truly an inspirational figure. And so much of what he predicted there in the 30s and 40s is coming to pass today. Would that be a fair statement?
It is absolutely fair. And his protege was Murray Rothbard, probably the man that most libertarians think of as their own hero.
Right. And then, of course, Franz Pick and a few of the others wrote about this. And these were people who were trying to awaken the American people to the fact that America is on a one-way trip to economic destruction. In fact, I believe we are currently on the edge of this. You're being lied to about our unemployment. You're being lied to about the state of our economy. You're being lied to about the stability of our dollar. You were lied to about what got us into the war. And I think you've been lied to about what lies ahead. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Flory Lilly. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Floy Lilly. So, Floy, of course, you're talking about this whole program, a massive expansion of government control over the lives of the people. So, it seems to be progressing at a very rapid rate all across America, isn't it?
It certainly is in America. It's not in every single country. And why I always kind of choose, Stan, I guess, to remain optimistic about the potential of our future is because I remember F.A. Hayek's own essay, The Fatal Conceit, and I bet you do also, in which he said the fatal conceit is for any one of us or clump of us or president's council of us to imagine that we know everything. And just when I think, oh my goodness, I do know everything, or certainly enough to feel that this is our darkening hour, and that we're only here to now keep a journal of it, of the civilization's final demise, then something extraordinary happens with real people grasping real freedom out of the day and turning things around. It actually happened in Estonia. It's happened in New Zealand. Every now and then, it even happens in a state in America. I think it's because we have been at such an incredible, splendid, joyous hype in our freedom, 100 years of it, that our darkness to me seems like such a precipitous fall. And yet, still, compared with the rest of the planet, this concept of economic freedom and the sovereignty of the individual, and how miraculous voluntary exchange in human action is, this is a very new idea. And civilization has certainly not been around all that long.
Well, I think that
I just continue to think, well, I'm not thinking of all that it could potentially be, Stan. What do you feel?
Well, right now we've got Ray on the line, and Ray's calling from Santa Cruz, so let's see what he or she has to say. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Hey, how are you tonight?
Pretty good.
Hello, Ray.
Hi. I wanted to mention that in the movie Fahrenheit 9/11, there's a clip showing Bush speaking at a dinner party of wealthy people, and he said, "Some people call you the elite. I call you my base."
Well, I haven't seen the movie
yet.
Yeah,
oh, it's great.
You really like it. Well, then, yeah. Of course, the problem with, and I have no love for George Bush, but then I have no love for John Kerry either. It's sort of a choice between being shot or being hung. Now, I don't really like either alternative.
Yeah. I can see why, too. I mean,
well, do you have anything else you wanted to say? Let's get Floy Lilly's response. Ray is calling, and he saw this Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, and commented that certainly Bush is talking to an audience and saying, some people call you the elite, well, I call you my base. So do you know anything about the movie, or how would you respond?
I do know some things about the movie. In San Diego, I came very close to seeing it, but then saw The Day After Tomorrow instead. And Ray, I would say that they are both the elite, and they are any power figure's base also. When you have
for just a minute. We're bringing other stations back on. And this is Dr. Stan, Floy Lilly, and we have Ray calling in from Santa Cruz, and we just lost Ray, but Ray was talking about the film Fahrenheit 9/11, and it pointed out that there's one clip there where George Bush is speaking to an audience of very wealthy people and remarks, "Some people call you the elite, but I call you my base." So I was asking Floy what she thought about that, or about the movie, or the choice that we have between two members of Skull and Bones and two people firmly supported by the Council on Foreign Relations. So what are your thoughts on this? Do we really have a choice in November?
Oh, too many times I've kind of voted against somebody rather than voted for somebody, Stan. I have met John Kerry. I met Kerry in Kyoto in 1997.
Now, that was when they were
creating the great energy crisis. You can't breathe out global warming hysteria. And John Kerry personally impressed me with all of his mean-spiritedness and his arrogance. And I know for a fact that John Kerry would very quickly conclude programs that Al Gore especially desired, which would truly hasten and close the lid on our use of energy, for one, science and engineering, and any use of nuclear energy at all. Kerry has said as much. George Bush, for all the things that he is not, has actually taken steps to improve the entire feasibility of the wonderful production of nuclear energy into electricity in America, and I will grant him that. George Bush has not wholeheartedly, as Kerry and Al Gore, endorsed this nonsense, non-science of catastrophic human-caused global warming, and I applaud him for it. Of the two men, I think Kerry is far more diabolical than this particular son, George Bush. I think of George Bush as a simply more simple person, and please give me simple presidents over those whose ambition o'erleaps itself. Anyway. So I will probably vote for George Bush in order to vote against John Kerry.
All right, fine. So if anybody else has any thoughts or remarks, we'd, of course, love to hear you. Our guest is Floyd Leather. We're really talking about Agenda 21 and sustainable development. Now, what is Agenda 21? Could you define Agenda 21 for our listeners if they're not acquainted with this term? Because it is the basis of the economic policy that is being carried out in America today, and I'm sure there's not one in a thousand people who really understands what Agenda 21 is. It's economic and certainly domestic policy. I suppose domestic policy might be
very clearly a real good friend of both of ours, Stan. Remember Dr. Dixie Lee Ray?
Yes.
Just before Dixie went as a representative to the Earth Summit in, of course, 92 down in Rio de Janeiro, she and I had talked about her being there. I had gone to 5 preparatory committee meetings leading up to the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. And when Dixie got back, she said to me, "Oh, it was just as you told me it would be about the politics and the economics." That Dixie personally asked Gro Harlem Brundtland, who was the hostess of that tea party in Rio, who was Norway's prime minister, and since the age of 7 had been an avid supporter in Norway of the Labour Party, the Progressive Socialist Party, and she said, "Well, Miss Madam Brundtland, this Agenda 21, this agenda for the 21st century, that's the entire plank of the International Socialist Party." And Dixie tells me that Brundtland said, "Of course it is."
And of course it is the agenda for the 21st century. It is the plan for a fascist America, for a fascist world. It was laid out and really planned ahead of time on the good ship Britannia, Prince Charles's yacht, where the members of the Prince of Wales Business Council, including Al Gore and all the business and financial leaders of the world, met to plan our future. Carried over then to the Second Earth Summit, published as the Global Biodiversity Assessment and Agenda 21. It's the plan for the establishment of a fascist America. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Floy Lilly. We're talking about Agenda 21, about sustainable development. And we touched a little on the upcoming elections in November. We have Nathan right now calling us from Contra Costa. Let me just put our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. How are you tonight, Nathan?
Hi, good evening to both of you.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi, how are you? I think, Dr. Stan, I think you put the nail on the head when you said the two skull and bones candidates, and that really defines this whole what's going on to me, is that we have a hijacking of our elected process. You know, my question is, to both of you, I think there's something that's very important that has come up this weekend that I didn't hear the afternoon program. It may be that you discussed it, but I'm just going to flat out ask both Dr. Stan and his guest. Do you both think that there is a possibility that there may be a pretext for calling off our elections?
All right.
Basically saying, you know, that it's no longer sustainable. Look what happened in Spain and all the rest of it. Do you think there'll be some sort of a push to do that by those who've hijacked both parties and who would be try to rule without elections?
All right, let's get Floyd's opinion on that.
Yeah, Nathan, that's a very fair question to ask. I don't think so, and I don't think so primarily because the media and popular opinion is not a pro-Bush. He is not the overwhelmingly popular one of these skull and bones folks, as you say. And I do believe that Republicans, whatever that is, would be smothered in this is unfair, they set it up that way, this is just one step beyond what, you know, Florida stealing Gore's presidency. And so, no, Nathan, I don't think so. But I do also believe, and I think Stan does, that this is such a fragile time. Maybe we are the chroniclers of this demise of our civilization, and perhaps what we are seeing is the death throes of the Leviathan beast, I think Lou Rockwell called it that, in which point people do really bizarre, drastic things, creating crisis in order to try to throw themselves into rule. Maybe it would take that. Do you think, Nathan, that would be the kind of crisis?
Well, is Lou Rockwell, I don't know if I entirely trust him.
Hold that stop for just a minute there, Nathan. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Floy Lilly. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And the question, of course, was raised a little earlier as to which candidate should we be backing. And you heard Ray calling in from Santa Cruz talking about Fahrenheit of 9/11. You heard Floyd's response that she's probably going to vote for George Bush, even though she doesn't, because she would be voting against John Kerry, who she's met and she feels is arrogant and a dangerous man. And then, of course, Nathan is called in and asks if we think there is really going to be an election. Would they perhaps be a terrorist attack, or would there be an engineered terrorist attack to prevent the elections? And I will tell you what I think, Nathan, and that is I think we will have the elections in November. And I would simply ask you a question. If there really is a world terrorist movement, and as we are told repeatedly, there are all these Islamic terrorists who hate us, and I'm sure there are. There's a growing hatred against America, but before you can carry out terrorist attacks, you have to have a country that's backing you. You have to have explosive training in building bombs. You have to have enough money to travel and to live in a community. You have to be able to get explosives. You have to know how to detonate those explosives. Now, if there really is this world terrorist movement, why is it we haven't had any significant terrorist attacks in the United States since September 11th of the year 2001? Oh, there have been attacks in other countries, but not in the United States. Have you ever wondered why there have been no attacks in the United States?
Could I comment, Doctor?
Sure.
You know, even if we don't have this scenario, there's still electronic voting. There's still what seemed to me to be a blatant push to replace our elected form of government with some sort of system.
But the question, let me just ask you, and maybe Floyd would like to comment on that question. I mean, when we start talking about electronic voting and the vote scam and all of those things, is an entirely different question. But have you ever stopped and wondered why there have been no terrorist attacks since September 11th, 2001? Doesn't it rather bother you? Because we know that there are all these wicked terrorists out there, and Osama bin Laden is directing this worldwide conspiracy. Why haven't they attacked America?
I read an interesting article the other day that weren't there 15 out of the 19 terrorists, they were Saudi Arabians,
right,
weren't they?
Right.
And the article went on to basically say that entire attack wasn't really against America so much as a warning to these people's own country, the Saudis, essentially, saying, if you don't do things we want, watch out. The Saudi Arabia could be under the hands of people like us instead of people that the United States seems to feel fine about being in bed with. And, you know, I'm not an international diplomat. I don't really know about that, but it strikes me that if we know these people were Saudis, why in the world are we looking in Iraq?
Well, that's a good question. Do you have anything else you want to say, Nathan, or do you want to comment on that question?
Well, I don't really like talking about the Middle East all the time.
Right.
I think that I just want to leave off with this comment that I'm not trying to be alarmist, and I'm not trying to I definitely want this election to happen, and I definitely, there is the argument that why would the powers behind the scenes allow that if they control both candidates? How would it benefit them? I'm not necessarily saying that this election would be called off, but I'm saying that they are looking for that power and they may use it at some later point, perhaps in some other administration. Who knows? It might, God forbid, be the next one. So,
did you ever stop to think that they're using the threat of terrorism to so terrify the American people that
they
think clearly? And that Tom Ridge comes up and tells us, John Ashcroft comes up and tells us that there is a threat of a terrorist attack and we should all be on the alert?
Why, yeah.
Tom Ridge doesn't even know about it?
And Americans need to understand that while terrorism is a real threat, we can't let it be used to deprive us of our freedom and our liberty and our constitutional system of government. In fact, I'm approve of going after the terrorists, and I approve of putting them out of business so that this threat can no longer be used as a pretext for changing our way of life.
Yeah, well, then why didn't we go after the terrorists and finish the terrorist war?
That's a very good
question.
Why
did we use, of course, going into Afghanistan as suddenly an excuse not to get Osama bin Laden, but to go after Iraq? Or maybe the war is fought for entirely different purposes than the American people have been told. Hey, thanks so much for calling me.
Thank you.
Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Floyd Lilly, who held the chair at the Clint Murchison chair was that the University of Texas?
Yes, University of Texas at Austin.
At Austin, how long?
Now I've come to Florida, and I've just opened a law firm.
All right, I know you have, and of course I'm so glad that you're down there, and I hope that you can help some of the people down in that region, because certainly the people are under attack today. Private property is under attack. Freedom is under attack from all sides, and the average individual has no idea what's really going on. He's so wound up with this threat of terrorism and concern over whether we either elect Bush or Kerry, and so many things. So many people now are having real economic problems. The rate of unemployment is much higher than you're being told, as is the rate of inflation. They're being lied to at every turn. And we're facing a real crisis in America, no matter who is elected in November. So we'll pick the story up from there. If you have a question, a comment, if you'd like to have any thoughts on whether it should be Bush or Kerry, or if you're really concerned about what we're talking about, and that is this move towards the total state using the threat of the environment or the threat to the environment to justify ever-expanding control over the lives of the people. And Floyd, you were talking about, of course, Dixie Lee Ray. And for our listeners, Dixie Lee Ray had actually been the governor of Washington. She was a Democrat, but she was a conservative Democrat who certainly had a vast understanding of environmentalism, and she wrote a number of books. In fact, we still carry a couple of those books that she wrote going into the back. Environmental Overkill was one of them. I've forgotten the name of the second one. We still
Trashing the Planet.
Trashing the Planet. We still have both of those books. We have some wonderful memories of Dixie Lee Ray and my interviews with her. She was a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Well, she was also director of the Atomic Energy Commission.
That's right.
So she just was such a strong spokesperson for affordable, available energy, knowing how energy just lessens the burdens of all humans.
And, of course, she realized full well that this whole thing of suppressing ability to generate electricity from nuclear power has always been a scam from the very beginning. Why?
Always.
Because the whole environmental movement's funded in large part by the great oil companies because they don't want the competition. Although I suspect that by now they've bought up most of the nuclear power and uranium and designs, and so I suspect it won't be too long before we will have nuclear power. But what you see is this is how you change wealth from weak hands to strong hands. But they've used the environmental movement for many years with all sorts of lies. One of the biggest ones is, well, you know, we can't have nuclear energy because why? We don't know what to do with the nuclear waste. Now, would you like to discuss that? Because that is one of the greatest scams of all time.
Oh, it certainly is. It's just crazy. They say, well, we have to bury this fuel rod. Well, what's crazy about it, Stan, is you know and your listeners should know that only in America, responding to this hysteria about radiation and all things nuclear, do we take a fuel rod and use 5% of it and then say, well, where should we bury the other 95% of this fuel rod? Whereas of all things, and I don't think there are that many things that the French do so well other than they surrender very well, but they do reprocess fuel rods well.
But
and those use 95% of their fuel rods and only glassine in a small little capsule, the other 5%. And it is only the falsehoods of by the anti-nuclear industry out there from the 60s and the 70s and that ever caused this. You know, 95% of the regulations that are put on nuclear energy and all things nuclear have no scientific basis to have scared people about their health or their safety. It's just amazing. And unfortunately, I was just talking with a nuclear scientist, a real good friend for 20 years, who is having to be in Hanford, Washington, overseeing the shutdown of our country's only ability to produce medical isotopes. And here I went through all this cancer, needing MRIs and CAT scans and radiation every day for 2 months, could not have done any of that or survived this without medical isotopes. And the plant is called an FFTF plant, and it is where America makes its only isotopes, and it is being shut down. All out of the nuclear hysteria.
And it is all hysteria. And for our listeners, you must understand that France does what is logical. Japan does it. Germany does it. Every country in the world simply reprocesses the partially spent fuel and keeps reprocessing it over and over again until, as Floyd says, in the end you end up just with this little tiny patch and you put it in glass and that's the end of it. But you see, they have never told the American people that the government has created barriers so that you can't reprocess the fuel rods. So they created the problem, and then they have hysteria on how we're going to solve the problem. And this is the same thing, whether it be water, or whether it be air, or whether it be food, or you name it. They create the problem, And then, of course, the government's got to come up with a solution. But nuclear energy is the cheapest form of energy, and people will tell you, oh, it's not cheap at all, it's so expensive. The reason it's only reason it's expensive is because of the interminable lawsuits that are brought by the environmental movement and by the government to block the development of nuclear energy. And all of this is funded by the government and by the great foundations and many times by the very oil companies and others that finance the environmental movement. And until people understand, they create the problem. And the most obvious thing is the use of the fuel rods. In other words, we process the fuel rods. Every other country in the world does it. The only country that doesn't do it is the United States. And as Floyd was saying, France doesn't do anything very well. Well, that's the only reason they do this well is because they're using American technology. We developed the technology for both the development of nuclear energy and for the reprocessing the fuel rods. And then Congress, in its wisdom, passed the legislation that blocked that effectively. And the fact that most people have never heard that simply, once again, reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, we've got Jeannie Soderman calling in from Aptos. Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Hi. Good evening. I appreciate the intellect of Flo Lilly.
Floy Lilly.
Floy. Okay. I cannot understand of the intellectuals voting for the lesser of two evils. That does not compute.
All right.
And I've heard her answer, and, you know, this is how the Nazis came in with Hindenburg, and then Hitler came in as the chancellor after that. And I'm reading a book about the Nazi seizure of power between 1930 and 1935. And they actually said that they were supporting the lesser of two evils. And so why not vote for someone that is not evil, that is good and understands our Constitution? And I'm going to ask Floy that because I'm not pleased with her answer.
All right, fine. Floy, now, do you want to tackle answering that?
Well, sure. Thanks, Jeannie. And you're right. And you need to tell me what the name of the book on the Nazis is, and I'll write it right down. And it's nothing I'm proud of. However, it's kind of like when Ron Paul, whom I admire as an elected representative, and he's a good friend, and he would run as a libertarian. And in this country, where essentially the odds are fixed, the game is fixed, this is not an open either party platforms. Essentially, I'm a libertarian, but I'm registered as an independent, and yet I can support the ideas. I support mainly the ideas of libertarians, and I have spoken as keynoter at their conventions. But until we're in a country that is less controlled, where I literally can feel that it is not a throwaway vote, then I'm flat going to try to still cast a vote where I know it's going to end up. And Ron Paul switched from Libertarian Party, where his beliefs are, to get into the Republican Party, just basically understanding the pragmatics of how crazy this is. Jeannie, I don't even like politicians. I'd like very much for both my liberty and my property and myself to be so secure that it didn't matter who the president was. And for 100 years in America, it was more like that. Certainly the Articles of Confederation and then the Constitution that the framers put together, which had nothing at all to do with democracies, had only to do with the republic, never imagined that a president would have the power to just steal from me and kill me. And now that they do, however, I'm very wary of that. And what I go out and support, Jeannie, are the ideas, but not the politicians, essentially.
All right, so...
But I love your view, Jim.
I'm going to counter that.
All right, Jay, go ahead.
Please do.
What you have stated is your answer, is how the two political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, have controlled our mindset over the last 50 years. And if we would just vote our conscience, and not have the mindset that you just described, we would be out of this mess. Now, Floyd...
But we would have to have a lot more people educated than simply just Floyd, wouldn't we?
Oh, most certainly, right. Yes. And so the name of the book is The Nazi Seizure of Power.
Okay.
And the author is William Sheridan Allen, A-L-L-E-N. And it was describing just one single German town between 1930 and 1935. Mm-hmm. And it went into all the psychological aspects of how the Nazis took over. And it's quite an interesting book. And so I hear other people very well educated on voting for the lesser evil. And all I can say is put your backbone in there and vote your conscience.
Who are you going to vote for, Jeannie?
Oh, the Constitutional Party, Mike Peruca. And it's hard to pronounce,
aren't we going to meet Mike next week in Reno?
Well, I hope
he's
going to be
there. Well, you are. I'm not. But
I don't know whether he's going to be there. I hope he'll be there.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway... then it's very important that we vote our conscience and vote for our Bill of Rights in our Constitution. Now, I did just see Fahrenheit 9/11, and Dr. Stan, you should see it because it's done very well. I don't have, everything that was done was documented, and I don't have any quarrel with that particular movie. But I understand the background of Michael Moore, and he's not to be trusted. So I believe we have a pressure from below and a pressure above. And what we as Americans must understand that our structure of government is not to be destroyed and given to the United Nations, but we have very evil men in Washington, D.C. right now.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Jeannie.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Very, very well spoken, Jeannie. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we're going to be carrying on this next hour. And if you have any thoughts, who you're going to vote for or why you're going to vote for them, why, I would love to hear what you have to say. So, but we're really talking overall about this movement towards a sustainable development and Agenda 21. Sustainable development is the master plan. Agenda 21 is how you will sell this to the American people. And, of course, it is the plan of the environmentalists, and certainly it would be the plan of the leadership, in my estimation, of both political parties, although certainly George Bush has taken a position of not signing the Kyoto Protocol, although we seem in many ways to be implementing it. He has certainly done a few things that were very favorable to the environment. But on the other hand, he's appointed a whole flock of pro-choice judges, all of these federal judges, 25 of them that are being put in at the present time with the support of the Democrats now. They're all pro-choice judges, a majority of them are. So, you know, the idea that if we just elect the Republicans, we're going, of course, to get back to those traditional moral values that we all hold true, doesn't necessarily... seem to. One thing I'd just like to ask your thought on, Floyd. If we, for instance, had the Republicans control the House and the Senate and the Democrats control the presidency, do you think we might get gridlock and, of course, slow down this process of moving towards an all-powerful government? Would we be better with an opposition from the Congress or Senate, or would we be better with the Republicans controlling the presidency, the Senate, and the House of Representatives?
Republicans have never delivered us much freedom. Some of the worst things that ever happened have happened on the Republican watch. horribly enough, I think gridlock would be preferable to either of those parties, which, from being there, a positive to some Democrat being in the White House could be, potentially, that Hillary Clinton would be less likely to be there herself the next go-round.
Wouldn't that be something if John Kerry won, and then, of course, he would run for a second term, and that would do away with Hillary, be the end of her career. Oh, what a terrible thought. Hey, we've got Will calling from Missouri, and we're just about out of time, but let's at least get his question in, and we can probably answer it maybe partially, and then finish it off the next hour. Hi, Will. How are you listening to us, on shortwave or internet?
I'm certainly on the shortwave, Dr. Stan, and I thank you for taking my call.
Good. What are your thoughts? Do you have a question for our guest?
Well, I have questions. I have comments, depending on how much time I have. I'll give you the first thing, though. In regards to the other lady caller, and in respect to Floyd, if any person that is sincere in their heart about voting third party, the first place, my recommendation, the first place is to contact that state Secretary of State's office and obtain for yourself a free booklet that covers the election laws in your state. And if you would just then read those very carefully, you'll see why, even though it might be an admirable thing and a wonderful and lofty goal, voting third party is not going to succeed because the election laws just don't open the door for that to happen. And so we have a two-party system, and that's where we need to begin.
All right, fine. What we're going to ask you is just sort of hang on with you, and then if you have a question, why, we'll take it right after the break, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners, many who will be leaving us from the Great Northwest, that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. And we are a voice across America, reaching out by radio 5 hours a day, and shortwave 4 hours a day, and internet 5 hours a day, and satellite about 4 hours a day. It's an expensive proposition, but then, after all, isn't it worthwhile investing to try to save America? And if you believe, as I do, that behind everything that's going on there are spiritual forces, why, then perhaps you'll give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that by just giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you have not yet seen our sustainable development syllabus, you really need to get that. That's a sustainable development syllabus. There is a video. It's called Sustainable Development. There's a 4-tape set on sustainable development. But the syllabus actually contains the Earth Charter and the World Bank Water Policy and analysis of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Program. It contains my Population Control Agenda monograph. It contains an article out of the Wall Street Journal. Arthur Schlesinger gave us permission to copy going into the background of that wonderful poem, Locksley Hall, which really encapsulates in just a few words what this is all about. For I dipped into the future, far as any eye could see, saw a vision of the world and all the wonders that would be, heard the heavens filled with shouting, and the rain to ghastly dew of the nation's airy navies grappling in the central blue, till the war drums throbbed no longer and the battle flags were furled in the Parliament of Man, the Federation of the World. Harry Truman carried those words with him all of his life. Winston Churchill said they were the most wonderful words ever written, and of course most people do not really understand that everything going on today has to do with this dream of creating a one-world government, a new world religion. We'll be back tomorrow evening. Of course, for those who are staying with us, we'll be back in the next hour. Until then, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or in this, here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we've got Will calling from Missouri, and Will, of course, feels that it's a futile gesture to vote for a third party. So, Will, did you have a question at all for our guest?
Yes, I do. Now, Floyd, I heard that you mentioned that you had opened a law practice, and I've been studying quite a bit. I'm not a lawyer, but I've been reading considerably about law. And one of the earlier comments that was made in the last hour had to do with fear and fear of coercion. And then you made comments in regards to the nuclear energy process, where our political system squelches a lot of the potential use of that. Now, my premise is that the positive law basically is at war, the legal positivism is at war with what remains of our natural law and what semblance may remain of the common law. Now, in that paradigm, the legal positivist, basically as the state, rising as God, if you will, are making all of the various and sundry laws and passing them out, yet at the same time, our rights are fleeing away, and the paradigm shift there is that from the state come all of our rights in the form of privileges, and all of our other rights are going away. And you mentioned about your preference that you would have your property be your own property and that you wouldn't have to fear the government. And I think that goes right in here. So can you address that legal positivism versus natural law shift?
I'll be glad to, Will. Thanks for such a good question. It certainly can't surprise anybody out there, Will, when you know that the judiciary is appointed by the ruling state. Now, I mean, the most simple cliche to say about this is we have the fox guarding the hen house. It doesn't take any time at all for the judiciary to flat make sure that they approve of and support absolutely everything that the Leviathan state wants to do. I'm not a bit proud of the judicial system that we have in America. The Supreme Court, of course, was to say, Congress, the legislature that you just passed, does not pass constitutional muster. Forget it. And they never do that.
That's right.
They just create the spandex. And they make up things. That's the positivism,
yes,
et cetera. Everything to support and underwrite whatever it is the Leviathan state wants to plunder and thieve next. And that is what they've done. They even created, we had natural law, we had the common things of, I have my property, you have your property, it is trespass, it is theft, it is common law things when we do something bad to each other or to each other's property. Well, then in California and Texas, we get Prosser and Keaton and folks who are so willing to stretch all that legal theory might do, that then they created this entire body of law called torts, which does incrementally increase the lawsuits one can have. And yet, what kind of justice do we get out of our justice system today when none of it is swift? I mean, justice delayed is justice denied. And Stan and I next week will be with the man Wayne Hage, who has the single largest property rights case against the U.S. federal government that's ever happened. And I've known I've known Wayne Hage for 15 years, and his case has been in court for 13 years. Justice delayed is justice denied. They're just hoping he will die before the court says, no, we can steal all of his water rights, because, of course, the Las Vegas wants all of those water rights. And so you're absolutely right. Positivism is just the creation of spandex out of what should have been a very strict constitution.
Do you feel
in constitutional law was my specialty in law school.
Do you feel, Floyd, whether the Hobbes-Rousseau conflict may be resolved in the next decades or so, that we might move completely away from representative government and the legal fiction that exists in that?
Well, some people whose minds I admire a lot, like Hans Hermann Hoppe, certainly thinks that. Have you read his book, Democracy, the God That Failed?
No, but I'm certainly writing that down.
Write it down. Hoppe, H-O-P-P-E, out of, he's right there at the University of Las Vegas in Nevada.
And is a
brilliant theorist, is what Hans is.
And Democracy, the name?
Democracy, the God That Failed.
The God That Failed. Well, I thank you very much for helping me.
Thanks so much, Will.
Thank you for the question,
but,
Will.
Well, of course, the thing is that whenever time anybody talks about democracy and tries to convince the American people we're a democracy, and a democracy is failing, democracy always fails. In fact, you go back and read what Andrew Tyler wrote. Before our Constitution was written, Professor Tyler said, democracies are temporary forms of government. They last only until the public learns that they can vote themselves into the public largesse.
Right.
And at that point, why, they vote for the man who promises them the most. The politicians provide what they want. The state eventually goes bankrupt and then is replaced by a despotism. This
Absolutely.
Is why Plato had written back 2,350 years ago, democracies always degenerate into despotism. There's nothing new under the sun. Democracy, the God That Failed, of course it was going to fail, because
Absolutely.
America was not a democracy. It was established as a republic, for as Madison had said so well, democracies are air spectacles of turbulence and contention, are incompatible with the rights of personal liberty and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. And ladies and gentlemen, that's just what you're seeing today. Isn't happening by accident, it's happening by intent, because America was created as a republic. Let's reclaim that. Would you agree?
Oh, you say it beautifully, Stan. Of course. No, it's just so crazy. I mean, it's tyranny by the majority. It's when two out of any three people can take your life, your liberty, and your property, and, give credit to the politician who arranged the transfer, for goodness sakes. Bastiat had a term for it, didn't he, Stan? He called it legalized plunder.
Right. And of course, we incidentally carry Bastiat's The Law. We carry a Fiat Money Inflation in France. Two of the most important little books you'll ever read. I love little
yes.
books, because it's much easier to get people to read that than a lot of the books we offer them, like Tragedy and Hope and some of the larger books. But Bastiat wrote a simple little book in 1848. Andrew Dickinson White wrote a book probably in the 1880s or 1890s about the fiat money inflation in France that followed the French Revolution in 1789. But these books are classic, and we carry them because we don't make much of anything out of them, but we want you to get the information. The average individual wouldn't know where to get these books, but we carry them in stock. And when you read them, you'll get the wisdom of the ages. Would you agree? I'm sure you know both of those books, don't you, Floyd?
I certainly do, and I have them, and I absolutely agree. We have to get educated on some topics in depth. And boy, economic freedom is one we better go in deep.
And I think what's really so important is that nothing has really changed. In fact, the biggest problem we have is that we're not bringing up another generation with the knowledge that I accumulated 42 years ago when I first got started in this battle. These were two of the first books we read. Bastiat's The Law by Frederick Bastiat was a contemporary of Karl Marx, a member of the French Parliament, and he was, of course, writing to counter these ideas of socialism. Why does socialism not work? And he wrote in 1848, and his words are as true today as they were when he wrote them. Now, 1848 was the year that Karl Marx published the Communist Manifesto. And, of course, the same thing, Andrew Dickinson White was writing about what happens when you have a currency without any backing and how it eventually is destroyed. And, of course, they tried it in the early 1700s under a man named John Law. They tried it in the late 1700s following the French Revolution. It has been done time and again. It was tried in Hitler's Germany. It was tried in Stalin's Russia. It was tried in, I mean, we've seen country after country go into economic turmoil for doing exactly what we're doing, and we are facing the greatest economic crisis that any nation ever has. We have more debt than any other nation and no possible way to pay it off, and we're destroying our industrial base, and we're destroying the value of our currency, and we're destroying the wealth of the middle class, and most people have no idea what's happening.
That's accurate.
So what are we going to do?
We have to keep speaking the truth in every format, every day that we can find. I have right here in Florida, Stan, I rent in a cute little neighborhood kind of a place on an island, and my gracious, 3 years into the neighborhood was established 3 years ago, and 3 years into it, suddenly there are neighbors of mine who are going to amend the original Declaration and Covenant for the Homeowners Association of this neighborhood, and they are going to change the basic nature of what it was that the owner of this place bought from a row house or a townhome. They are going to turn it into a quasi-condominium and begin to assess monthly fees against a common roof. Well, something with a common roof is not what the owner of where I rent thought he was buying. And these people simply say, we're going to get a majority vote and force you to pay this common monthly assessment, or we will put a lien against your titled property and get it, you know, get you off to jail, get it foreclosed, any of those things. And they are incredulous that somebody might not want to be coerced after the fact about the kind of property they bought. So, it's pretty crazy.
Well, I'm sure that you'll probably be able to explain to them why what they're doing is morally and ethically and probably legally wrong. But, of course, so much harm is done in the name of democracy, of majority rule.
Right.
And I always liked that wonderful story. I mean, the perfect example of a democracy is a lynch mob. And there's usually only one person who's voting against the lynching, and that's the guy at the end of the rope.
Well, it was democracy that killed Christ,
yeah,
and democracy that killed Socrates, and you can have it.
Right.
It is tyranny.
And who would you have, ladies and gentlemen? Do you want Barabbas or Christ? And
and
the majority cried out, give us Barabbas, give us Barabbas. And so it was the democratic thing to do, to send Christ to the cross. And people do not understand. They've never been taught in their schools.
No.
The democracy always fails. There's nothing new under the sun. The ancient Greeks knew it. The ancient Romans knew it. And here it was known in America until 50 or 60 years ago. And then, of course, because the wicked people had gained control of the media and the great foundations and the universities and the high schools and our textbooks and certainly our encyclopedias, they simply rewrote history. And people do not understand. There really are people who have a different agenda, because they realize that once we go into a democracy, it's only a short term, a short step to tyranny and the establishment of a feudalistic society with a ruling elite and everybody else enslaved. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We've got Roger calling in from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. Question?
Yeah, hi, folks. Question, have you followed this line of reasoning, which I just heard over the last few years and more persuaded recently, that the Constitution's basically been dead since 1930-something, when the UCC, or Uniform Commercial Code, was sort of brought in to replace it, and then we're basically, the debt service through the Federal Reserve, etc., been in a state of receivership to the international banking establishment. and then so we find that it's virtually impossible to get Article 3 and perhaps Article 1 courts anymore. Instead, we have admiralty law jurisdiction almost always unstatedly, but in fact used in courts, and you know, rarely to get admissions by judges, but you do occasionally that that's what's going on. You don't have constitutional rights.
All right, fine. Let's get to Floyd's interpretation of this, because I think what you're expressing is a totally defeatist attitude aimed at totally neutralizing everything. But go ahead, Floyd. What would your impression be of what Roger is saying? Oh, it's already done. It goes back to 33. We lost the Constitution. How would you respond to it?
Well, Roger, even if it were true, I must still speak what it is I know about how humans can voluntarily act within an industrial civilization. So even if that were true, I would have to reestablish a proper contract as such. I do know, Roger, that a piece of what you reflect, and that is that there are only certain courts that could take respond to constitutional issues, and that people are very confused about that. I sure know that that is true. Constitutional issues can essentially only get raised in the U.S. Court of Claims, and few people understand that, and generally they go into what are administrative courts, where it's a simple matter of, oh, you were driving 56, not, you know, I mean, it's not about the speed limit, but it's simply you broke a regulation or a rule or a law, and it's not about the ideas behind the Constitution. And so administrative courts is where most people end up, and they can't ever argue a constitutional issue there.
But can't you demand a constitutional court? In other words, can't you demand that they bring this before as a constitutional issue?
You have to only stand if you have phrased your entire cause of action is a constitutional cause of action, and not every lawyer understands that in an effort to help people. I think our judicial system is just a horrible mess, and I'm in it primarily in land use issues to try to protect people's title to private property, which is, in, as you know, a very small percentage of the property out there any longer. And eroding. I thought Roger was going to say, take a pot shot at what happened about 85 years ago with the ICC being, the Interstate Commerce Clause being once again spandexized in order to simply create out of whole cloth reasons for the state to say what you couldn't do. All across the land.
Yeah, that was the wholesale invention out of the 14th, of course,
yeah,
you're pointing to.
Right. I mean, this whole business about direct election of senators, for goodness sakes, and Hillary's constant attempt to get the Electoral College, you know, declared dead on arrival, which would wipe out every rural agrarian state impact or voice. I actually preferred the Articles of Confederation to the Constitution, as many people did back then, but I'm right now struggling, Roger, with I know that if I've got a democracy, it will devolve into a dictatorship. I'm struggling with how in the world does anybody even keep a representative republic with the way the allure of absolute power.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to have to go to break here. Thanks very much, Roger, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have put Jeannie on in just a moment. She's calling back. She wants to answer Roger. I would simply say that we hear all of these things. Oh, it's terrible. There's nothing we can do. I'm much more concerned about the executive orders that were brought in, you know, of the War Powers Act that was brought in at the time of the Roosevelt administration, which has really been continued ever since then in one guise or another. And we have an article out of the Congressional Record back in 1972 written by, of all people, by Senator Frank Church and Senator Mathias, both Democrats, both very concerned about the fact that we really were not operating under constitutional law because of the War Powers Act and the executive orders that had were being utilized at that time, and this still persists today. But I will tell you that the people on the other side, the elitists who want to establish a fascist society, are still worried about the Constitution. And you can read Richard Gardner's classic article, and it was written in April of 1974, appeared in Foreign Affairs magazine, where Richard Gardner talked about how we were going to have to do an end run around the Constitution. We have to use the World Trade Organization and the Law of the Sea Treaty, because all of these all of the Constitution prevented them from doing what they wanted directly. So at least the people on the other side are still much more worried about the Constitution than a lot of constitutionalists are, who have just sort of thrown up their hands and said everything's terrible, nothing we can do. So let's go to Jeannie Soderman and get her thoughts on this. Hi, Jeannie. How would you respond?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Well, I'm on my cell now, and when Roger called in, you know, I hear this all the time, and the elitists are very concerned that the people will understand that they have power behind the Constitution. And what we have now is a de facto government, an illusion of a real government, and for what they did in the court system is a fraud. They have committed it by a fraud. It is not legal. And so, Roger, that's a real defeatist attitude, and I agree with you 100%, Dr. Stan, that we have to stand beside the Constitution and say it's there, because the elitists want us to understand that it's no longer there. And it really is, because the elitists have committed their rulings in court by fraud. Thereby, it is not legal.
All right. How would you respond to what Jeannie was saying there, Floyd?
Well, go Jeannie. I hope you're right.
I really think that the other side is fraudulent. I believe that the elitists, the Council on Foreign Relations, is a subversive organization, and the people, at least the leaders of this organization, are part of an organized movement that should be prosecuted under RICO statutes, because they are intent upon changing our form of government and establishing a feudalistic system under their rule, destroying national sovereignty and merging us into this one world system that they've dreamed of. They're the subversives, and if we could convince the American people of that, then we'd be able, of course, to I think get back to our freedom.
Right, we've called education.
All right.
Yeah, we still have real power, whether some people think we don't or not. At every single UN meeting that I've attended in the last 16 years, I guess, it's always mentioned that, well, if we could just get past that darn constitution over there in the U.S., we'd be a clean sweep around the world and take all their money. But these people who are so ignorant, they still believe in that thing.
And I think that's what's so important, is that we are not taken and discouraged by these naysayers who are doing everything they can to discourage us. Let's stand by the Constitution. Let's cling to the Constitution. And here we are. Of course, we're back once again. Jeannie, anything else you want to say?
No, that's it.
Okay,
it's
fine.
Called, and it's so called education, and that's what you're doing, Doc.
Okay, fine. Jeannie, I guess we lost Jeannie, and then, of course, let's go ahead. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you would like to give us a call, if you have any comments about what Floy has been talking about, I think that it's so vitally important. We understand that we still have the Constitution. The people on the other side are worried about it, it seems that we have a lot of naysayers here that will tell us everything wrong with the Constitution. I had a fellow call me this afternoon who thought the Constitution was a terrible document, and even Benjamin Franklin, when he came back from France, at the end of the Constitutional Convention, said, why, all these things are wrong with the Constitution, and I pointed out, look, Benjamin Franklin didn't come back from France at the end of the Constitution. He was there, he was instrumental in writing the Constitution. Oh, no, he was over in France all that time, and the Constitution is terrible, and it's an elitist, and carrying on and ranting about, how terrible the elitists were that wrote the Constitution. It wasn't for the common man, no document is perfect, but it's the best we have, and if we turn our back on that, then what is it that binds us together as a people?
We've had several presidents who, given the opportunity, for instance, when Clinton had the opportunity to recommend a constitution to Bosnia, and I was with Richard Tribe out of Harvard, who was trying to help put together a constitution for Czechoslovakia, and I was over in Innsbruck, Austria, with that effort. And do you know that both of the constitutions recommended to these countries are essentially the UN constitution, the UN charter?
I agree with you totally. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we really started out this evening talking about the Sustainable Development Agenda 21, this master plan to change society. And, of course, it's really all encapsulated in something known as the Earth Charter, which is written by three very, very powerful men, all dedicated to the occult in one form or another. And those three men who are dedicated to the cult would be Marie Strong, Mikhail Gorbachev, and people find it difficult that Gorbachev could be dedicated to the occult, but he is, and all you need to do is go to his meetings to find out the occultism that's there. We even have a book written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, who tells that as he was leaving Moscow one time after a visit in Russia, the communist was with him, say, things were going pretty well until Gorbachev went to England and was inducted into a secret Masonic lodge by Margaret Thatcher. And after he came back, and then, of course, everything began to fall apart as he began to move to destroy Russia. And the question is, what was Gorbachev doing, an atheist inducted into a secret Masonic lodge? Well, all we know is this is what James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, wrote, but I bet you're not going to hear that from Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Rush Limbaugh, or Bill O'Reilly. So there is a stronger cult, and then, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the third man who wrote the Earth Charter. They put it into the Ark of Hope, the occult counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant, because everything these people do is the marriage of Christianity, because they realize what the average American does not realize, and that is that what is happening today is a spiritual battle, and everything they do is the exact opposite of the Christian message. So they create an Ark of Hope, the counterpart, the occult, demonic counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. They create a new Ten Commandments. They call it the Earth Charter, but they will openly say this is the new Ten Commandments, the Earth Charter. And what does it call for? Why, it calls for the redistribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And that's why they are shipping our jobs overseas. That's why they're shipping our factories overseas. That's why they're going to destroy the dollar and destroy the middle class. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And of course, our guest this evening is Floy Lillian. Floy, do you have a website or any sort of a telephone number or anything you'd like to get out on our program here before we go to Mary, who's calling us from Arizona?
Well, anybody could email me at my office email, which is floylilly@bellsouth.net.
At bellsouth.net.
Right.
That's floylilly@bellsouth.net, right.
Right. But no, I don't currently have a website up. You know I'm vice chairman of Sovereignty International, and so when I post articles to the Internet, I post under freedom.org or sovereignty, usually.
All right, fine. And, of course, if you are out there across America, why, let me suggest that if you'd like to hear Floy speak, she's going to be at the conference, the Freedom 21 conference. It's going to be held in Reno at the Nugget Hotel from Wednesday to Friday of next week. That's the 21st to the 23rd, 24th, I guess it is. So if you're interested in going, why, you can go to their website, Freedom 21, or give us a call. I'm going to be there. I didn't get asked to speak, but that doesn't matter. I'm going to have a booth there, and we're just going to try to get these people, these good people, to understand really what we're up against. Well, let's go to Mary, who's calling from Arizona. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Fine. God bless you. I just would like to say that Constance Cumby sort of put it real well when she said that the whole world, not the whole world, but the world would go through an initiation. And God put it real well, the very same thing. He said, being born again, of corruptible seed in 1 Peter. And I think that's the what we're seeing today through total quality management, coaching, OBE, and the purpose-driven church. There isn't an avenue that they have not covered. And we're seeing a whole lot of Stepford wives, husbands, and children all over the world. And the answer is the Holy Spirit of God, that we could understand the Bible and get into it real well, and know what to pray for. Because all of these subjects that we talk about, I do programs on them also, all of these subjects will do us no good unless we expose the evil. We have to expose the wiles of the devil and do it in our normal conversation, because no other way will people understand and have the type of knowledge where they would go into all of the literature they need to go into.
Okay, just hold that thought for me, Mary. You didn't hear my program this afternoon, did you?
Oh, I wish I had. I couldn't.
Oh, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Floy Lilly. We, of course, have Mary calling in from Arizona, and she's alluding to the spiritual aspect of the battle that we're in, and the fact that most people don't recognize the spiritual aspect of the battle, and she's absolutely right. This truly is a spiritual battle that's being fought on an environmental battlefield, on a political battlefield, on an ideological and cultural and financial and educational battlefield, but it's all spiritual. And I was just telling Mary that we did a program this afternoon with a young man who'd been involved with in rock and roll culture. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll was the slogan of the late 70s, and Led Zeppelin, and of course Jimmy Page, but so many of these people openly admitted that souls to the devil. They were disciples of Aleister Crowley, who was a Satanist, who had a home on Loch Ness in Scotland. He was known as the other monster of Loch Ness. He was an advocate of human sacrifice and bestiality and homosexuality, and those were the good things you could say about him. But people do not understand that it infiltrates our music, it infiltrates now our churches as we bring the devil's music into our churches, because we're told, or we're assured, there's no such thing as Christian music, only Christian lyrics. And all I can say is anybody who's been part of the rock and roll environment, part of the rock and roll movement, knows that this music that we're bringing into the churches comes right out of the pit of hell. But anyway, is there anything else you want to say, Mary?
Just that I walked into a Walmart store one day, and the manager had all of the employees except the cashiers all in a circle. And he was using total quality management on them, And they would clap three times and then pause and then clap twice and then shout. And he got them into a total euphoria. And when he got through with them, they were just totally, totally worshiping the corporation. And this is what's going on all through this world right now through the UN. And I wish that people would realize the satanic aspect of all these things and how they are used to eliminate God and Christianity.
And, of course, these total quality management programs that Peter Drucker first went into the corporations, and then they went into education, and now they're in our churches.
And that's the whole core of what is going on today.
Amen
and
to that.
Why we have all of these problems with the voting, with the politicians. They're all into all of this.
Let's get Floyd's remarks. Floyd, would you respond to what Mary's saying?
Well, Mary, you've recognized very clearly, as Stan has, that essentially the message that we are all hearing today is one to be enslaved and to die.
Right.
And yet the older message that I respond to is the directive, a clear, joyful directive that says, go forth and multiply.
Amen.
And that alone convinces me that I must, it is the basis for everything else, I must speak the truth about why I must be able to own my property, own my body, be voluntarily in charge of all of my choices and my actions.
See, one
because
of the things
to not do that, I would die instead of being able to go forth and multiply, and I believe that directive is to take us across the galaxy.
Well, one of the things, let me just ask you this, Floyd. One of the things that recently that President Bush has advocated is that everybody should be tested for mental health. And they certainly want to do this in every child in every school, but they want to start testing all adults for mental health because some of us may not be healthy mentally and we should be medicated. How do you feel about that?
Well, it just goes back to the whole egalitarian equality issue, I think, Stan, as if only if we are all equal in responses, equal in emotional spikes and peaks and valleys, are we malleable, are we properly fit for an unthinking kind of serfdom and enslavement. Well, pox on their houses, forget that. Nothing natural about that. It's not us. Not us.
Amen. Anything else you want to say, Mary?
Just that that health new program there is from Russia, straight from Russia.
Sure, you're absolutely right.
Yes, and that there are more of us than there are of them, and God bless you.
God bless you. Well, Mary, your job is to get people listening to our programs.
Oh, yes, I even put you on my program.
Well, I really appreciate
on
that.
On television.
God bless you. And the other thing is that please, you know, if encourage people to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness.
Yes.
I'm sure you've seen Brotherhood of Darkness,
yes,
the video.
Yes.
That's the message we need to get out. And it's as good as anything available. God bless.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Dale here in Arizona. Dale calling from Aptos. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Dale. How are you doing?
Hey, pretty good. It's a beautiful night out. And I just want to make a quick comment about this medicating program that they're suggesting, which it usually starts out as, like the European Union was a suggestion. However, it's not a mystery that Daddy Bush is a major shareholder in Eli Lilly, and also I've noticed there's a lot of behind the doors legislating going on with Medicare and that, not only to gear mass medication to the pharmaceutical companies, but please correct me if I'm wrong, if they aren't legislating to outlaw vitamins, and I believe it's already been accomplished, essentially nutritional supplements being illegalized in the country of Australia. and I'll take your comments on the air. Thank
you. Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Dale. And what do you think about what Dale was talking about and his concerns about them, of course, increasingly controlling our ability to take vitamins and minerals and wanting to force us to take drugs that the government thinks are proper?
Oh, the American Medical Association will kill us yet, I suspect, if we were to let them. And I just want to see them try to tell me I can't take supplements and things that I want to. My gracious, so as I was fighting my cancer, I was all along taking an alternative old Indian bloodroot medication that Wayne Hage had actually suggested to me against tumors. And I, when they came to do the first surgery in 2001, they actually couldn't find any cancer any longer. We did the surgery anyway so we could see if there were pathologically cancer cells still in me, and turned out there was not. But I truly think that it was the alternative pakun bloodroot that worked with me, not the poisoning and not the radiation and not the scalpel.
Okay, well, I really believe that there's a great deal to be said for alternative forms of treatment and alternative forms of medication. But in a free society, we should be able to do what we want to with our own bodies. And if we trust the government, well, I'll tell you what, one of the stories they can't stand, and we're going to be talking about that this week, and that's the new book out, The Virus and the Vaccine, pointing out that the government gave a majority of the American people a cancer-producing virus in the polio vaccine, and they knew it was there, and they continued putting it out. And this is one of the most deadly viruses. You put it in any animal, they develop cancers, and this is one reason we're having so many cancers today. And they cannot let the American people know that, so they've been lying for 50 years. This happened back in, about 1960 when this all happened. They started about 1955, so it's almost 50 years ago, and they've known it for at least 45 years, and they're frightened to death the American people would know. Why we suddenly might realize we can't trust the government to provide us with the vitamins and tell us which vitamins we can take. And I believe that when we have created a nation that keeps all people from their folly, then we will have created a world of fools. And if we allow them to do it, we are a world of fools. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Floy Lilly, and believe me, there are people who have an agenda out there. And I do not believe that all of this is accidental. I believe that they're fluoridating our water, and they know that it is a poisonous waste. I believe that they are putting mercury in the vaccines and leaving it in the influenza vaccine, knowing full well that it is toxic to the mind and to the brain, and produces Alzheimer's disease in adults and autism in children. I believe that they know the disastrous effects of aspartame and NutraSweet, and produces brain tumors and convulsion disorders and premature development of puberty and all sorts of other complications. I believe that they are intentionally withholding treatments that can be a cure for cancer, because, of course, as Dr. Day, former medical director of Planned Parenthood, has been quoted as saying, people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. And if you haven't heard our four-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians, you need to get it. You need to hear it. The New Order of the Barbarians, the most incredible story you'll ever hear. And I believe it's completely true. I believe there really are wicked and evil people out there. And until people recognize that fact, we cannot understand anything going on. And that's what Mary from Arizona was trying to bring out. There really are evil people out there. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, our guest this evening, Floy Lilly, who's good enough to be with us for a two-hour marathon. And, of course, it's getting pretty late back there in Florida, but we've only got about 15 minutes to go, and then we're going to let you turn into a pumpkin. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to bring out about the environmental movement, Floy?
Well, it was interesting. A question came to me today saying, well, did we ever ratify Agenda 21? That's this whole sustainable development thing. And I said, oh, well, that's the lark. It wasn't even a treaty. It was soft law that Clinton, through an executive order, decided to implement across America. Perfectly amazing. And then I mean, it's almost like my response could have been, well, what difference would it have made? We have treaties we did not ratify, like the Convention on Sustainability, that that are still also being implemented across America.
Speaking now of the Biodiversity Treaty.
The Biodiversity
Treaty. Right, and of course, Congress or Senate refused to ratify, but they're implementing it anyway.
Yes.
And the Kyoto Protocol, they're still implementing it.
Well, they are through all of those carbon dioxide exchange programs.
Sure.
These things that the monopolist corporations will have undertaken, and then they absolutely, they will have been a big waste if they don't get credit for that, so then they want to force an implementation of this rationing of energy.
And, of course, this is why they're running up the price of gasoline. I do not believe for one minute that we have the shortage of oil that they talk about. If you haven't read the wonderful book, The Energy Non-Crisis by Lindsay Williams, we carry that, and we've done a number of recent interviews with Lindsay. If you haven't heard them, you really need to get them. And understanding it's all a great scam, but how else can you justify raising the price of gasoline? The real purpose is to make it get the gasoline so expensive that they're going to force us out of our cars. That's what it's really all about. And, of course, because the car represents freedom, and these people don't believe in freedom, they want you to get you out of your car, and that's one of the things they was the whole basis of this sustainable development and the Agenda 21 programs. Have you looked into that idea, that they really do want to get us out of the cars and onto bicycles?
Oh, of course. Al Gore's... And I just call it Earth in the Lurch, his book. It was called Earth in the Balance. I mean, absolutely gorgeous, ranted about the internal combustion engine and it being this, along with humans, being the cancer on the planet. And this smart growth, this clumping and clustering of people into Portland's and urban center, I see in every place I've been, in what are called future land use maps and comprehensive land use plans, with little islands of people surrounded by, and now the Department of Defense is doing all these PowerPoint shows around every military installation across America, on how there must be 3-mile-wide buffer zones because the military bases are the only now habit, little island habitats of ecological diversity. And a few of us say, now, when did the military mission become this saving of species habitat?
And if you're really interested, that... how do you correlate that with what they're doing over in Iraq, where they're destroying everything and disseminating depleted uranium, which will have a profound impact on both man and plants for, 4 billion years? Now, if the purpose of the military is to preserve things, I always thought it was to destroy things and kill people.
Well, the brochure for Camp Blanding here in Florida is this beautiful brochure, American flag, all of that, and it's training in the environment. That is the military brochure for Camp Blanding.
In other words, they're using the military to push their environmental agenda, like
absolutely,
they're using everything else to push the environmental agenda, and the solution for every environmental problem is
the
a new series of laws.
The Department of Defense has partnered with the Nature Conservancy to either put a perpetual non-use on all land, or simply make you give up and give it away.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Floy is trying to bring out the fact that there is an agenda, and the American people are not being told what it's really all about. And the problems, most of them are created. Certainly, we all want to see the environment. But some of the biggest polluters in the world are the very people who are pushing this whole environmental issue. Why? Because they want to create the problem so they can justify a solution. And that's what it's really all about. And until people understand that this is the same old game, they've been playing it over and over and over again, whether it's blocking efforts to conserve water so we can have a water shortage, whether it's blocking efforts to develop nuclear energy so we can have electricity shortage and we can drive the price through the roof, whether it's creating artificial shortages of natural gas by insisting that all electric generating plants use natural gas and then there isn't enough for the people, and of course we have shortages and the price goes up. It's all created and orchestrated. But we can't let the American people know that. Have you noticed how that works, Floyd?
Well, I think that we live in a country with the most censored press, not the least. I truly do love the Internet, however. And I wonder if you agree with me, Stan, that I think essentially the genie is out of the bottle and she's not going to be put back in. We have real facts. There's a lot of garbage, too, but we can get hold of real facts and real knowledge that can probably even bring us to understanding about these issues. I mean, not a day goes by that I don't do Google searches, and I bet that is true of you also, Stan.
Yeah, it surely is, and I think it's a wonderful thing. I held off on the Internet and all these things for a long time, but I wouldn't get by without it now. And there's so many wonderful sites out there. Now, the first thing, though, you have to realize that there's a lot of disinformation. The CIA posts all sorts of lies up there to confuse us, and there's all this garbage about, oh, it's too late, there's nothing we can do. I just curl up over in the corner and give up. Or the Constitution is a terrible document, and oh, you know, the oligarchs, they've been in control since 1776 and before, and you know, all of this to get you so confused overloads you with information. So you have to learn who you can trust, and this is one reason why I hope you'll listen to our programs and listen to our guests, and most of the guests we have on here are very reliable, and if they're not, why, you can tell from, you know, my questions whether they're reliable or not. I think Flory Lilly has a tremendous grasp of what's going on, and she's been at this battle for a long time. But understand who you can trust, read their articles on the Internet, and then, of course, help spread that information to others. Because we are the majority, we're the vast majority of people. And people telling people, telling people, is the one thing the enemies of freedom fear more than anything else. An inflamed and angry and an informed American people are going to say, we're not going to take this anymore. Are you subversives who control both political parties? We're going to expose your subversive agenda. And according to the terms of the Patriot Act, you are really terrorists. And boy, I'll tell you, they would run for cover so fast, you wouldn't even be able to see them. They'd move so quickly.
Well, don't you feel, Stan, that that a trust level in our government, though, is really dissolving? I don't actually know anybody right now in my circle who wants to be a civil servant, who wants to be a bureaucrat. I don't find politicians getting any respect. I don't find them earning any respect either, most of them.
What was that saying? Politics is the second oldest profession, and in many respects it's approaching the first oldest profession.
Yeah. Well, I truly think they're going to bring it down. They will. I mean, always this kind of plunder, this kind of coercion, oppression requires, as Ayn Rand, her phrase was, the sanction of the victim. I mean, just enough of us have to finally say, no, I'm not going to be your serf any longer. I can see through this. The emperor is not wearing any clothes. You've told me one lie too many, made one too many promises about peace and happiness and liberty and democracy, whatever that might mean, and you deliver only higher taxes, you send my children to perpetual war, you are not good for me, you are not good for life, you are delivering death, and you are sure in my way.
Well, I think when the American people, enough of them really care, I think we just have to make them realize what is really at stake. I think when they realize that they're going to reinstall the draft and start sending their sons and daughters, or grandsons and granddaughters, overseas to become cannon fodder in the series of wars that both political parties are dedicated to, until the American people understand that they are intent upon destroying the value of their savings, their pensions, their annuities, their bank deposits, their CDs, until the American people understand that freedom is at stake, and they're going to either have to stand up now and say no, or maybe they'll be on their knees soon saying yes. Until the American people really care about freedom and liberty and understand what it's about, why nothing's going to change. But I think there's a growing movement out there, and I've been at this for 42 years. I'm more encouraged than I've ever been before. How about you, Floyd?
Oh, I am too. I think that 40 years ago was a very darker case. And yet I think that there's more than freedom at issue here, because it's human civilization that is at issue. And I do believe that people will recognize that dark ages can come again and whole civilizations could be wiped out without the individuals demanding to be in charge of their bodies and the factors of production privately, in order to create the wealth that delivers the health to everybody around us.
Amen. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest this evening has been Floy Lilly, and formerly the chair, Clint Mitchison chair at the University of Texas, but now in private practice down there in Florida. We'll be having her as a frequent guest in our programs as she'll come on with us, because she has a tremendous grasp of what's going on. She was been friends with Governor Dixie Lee Ray, and of course one of my favorite people. Floy understands that freedom is at stake, silence is not golden, it's yellow. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
I will see you next Wednesday in Reno, Nevada. Glad to do it.
God bless you. Good night, Floyd.
Good night.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope that many of you out there will learn from our programs, because this is primarily a learning experience to try to get you to understand these basic fundamental concepts and giving you access to the information you need to be join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation, or any nation conceived under God, can long endure. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs, radio 5 hours a day, shortwave internet 5 hours a day, shortwave 4 hours a day, satellite 4 hours a day, and we hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us. And then, of course, we hope that you will tell others about our website at radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we hope if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our last newsletter told you who Osama bin Laden really was. Why it was that, despite the fact that the President of the United States on several occasions told the CIA to liquidate, to exterminate, to kill Osama bin Laden, why the CIA refused to carry out his directives. Now, why would that be? Well, we ask a lot of questions, and maybe we answer a few of them. In my May-June newsletter, if you'd like a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. So until tomorrow evening, when we'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.